Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, May 12th, 2020. I'll begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, "Good news, bad news. Illinois impact. Region's progress offset by gloomy forecast for virus peak." The number of confirmed cases in Champaign County grew by 32 Monday, the highest 24-hour increase to date, for a total of 298. An equal number, 146, are considered active and recovered, with 7 patients hospitalized. There are now 82 cases linked to a COVID-19 outbreak at Rantoul Foods, and 225 more employees remained to be tested Monday. The number of positive cases in Rantoul grew up to 88, with the village's 61866 zip code accounting for 17 of the 32 new cases reported countywide. Rantoul's total is more than twice that of the zip code with the second most cases, Champaign's 61821 with 40. That's one more than Champaign's 61820 and 3 more than Urbana's 61802. Updates to models used by the state now show the virus peaking in Illinois in mid-June, a month later than was last announced on April 23rd. "In many ways, this news is disheartening," Governor J.B. Pritzker said. "We have made great progress, but it's forced us to remain at a moderated, though still high, level of key metrics for this extended period. The central, that's us, is outpacing the rest of the state in key metrics that will determine which of the 4 regions advance to phase 3 of the 5-phase Restore Illinois plan on May 29th. The central has the lowest positivity rate, 6.0%. Regions must be at or under a 20% rate and increasing no more than 10 points over a 14-day period. Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike said the state received 140 cases of the promising COVID-19 drug, Remdesivir, it's R-E-M-D-E-S-I-V-I-R, from the federal government, with each able to provide treatment to 5 patients. The drugs were sent to 14 hospitals around the state by considering hospitalization and ICU data, as well as treatment of the most critically ill and patients of color. The next headline reads, "A Life Remembered, Rudy Frasca." That's Rudy, R-U-D-Y, Frasca, F-R-A-S-C-A. He really did change the industry. Navy instructor was a pioneer in flight simulators. This article is written by Ben Sigderman and is based out of Urbana. The founder of Frasca International is being remembered as a titan of the flight simulator industry who lived a full life. Rudy Frasca died Monday in Savoy at the age of 89. Mr. Frasca's influence could be felt across the world, family friend Jim Barham said. "Anytime I meet a pilot during a layover delay, they always mention Frasca. Every single time," Barham said, "because they have had some experience on a Frasca trainer. He really did change the industry. Mr. Frasca started learning to fly when he was 14, became an instructor in the Navy, then attended the University of Illinois, where he researched aviation psychology and maintained simulators at the U of I's Aviation Research Lab. He built his own flight simulator in his garage, and in 1958, he founded Frasca Aviation, which was later renamed to Frasca International. It was located on the southeast corner of Neal and Green Streets in Champaign until 1990, when the factory moved to Frasca Field in North Urbana. Rudy really changed the simulator industry and did it right here," Barham said. "It's still one of the world leaders. The company, now more than 60 years old, sells simulators around the world to aviation schools, commercial airlines, and the Navy. Mr. Frasca served as the Grand Marshal in the 2015 Champaign County Freedom Celebration Parade and was named the V. Dale Cozad Entrepreneur of the Year in 2013. He and his wife Lucille, who was as much a part of the company as he was, built Frasca International into what it is today, along with his children," said Urbana attorney Dick Tice, T-H-I-E-S, who kept an airplane at Frasca Field and represented Mr. Frasca from time to time. Mr. Frasca had 8 children, many of whom are still involved in the company. It was a typical Italian family. Everything was family-oriented, Barham said. His family was everything to him. Barham said Mr. Frasca could be stern. He used to scare me if we did something wrong, but he also had a sense of humor. He was a jokester, and I'd fall for it every time, Barham said. He'd see me in the parking lot. He'd say, I made the front page of the Wall Street Journal. But it was the mailing tag. Mr. Frasca also organized fly-ins, collected antique planes, and wrote a book about his love of aviation called From Cubs to Spitfires. He flew probably every day of life until he wasn't able to, Barham said. He loved to fly, Tice said. He was just a wonderful person. The next headline reads, State Rep, Ex-Illini Shaken by Incident in Chicago. This article is written by Bob Asmussen and is based in Champaign. A trip to the store 2 Sundays ago in Chicago's South Loop turned into a headline-making story for former University of Illinois lineman Cam Buckner. Now an Illinois state representative, he discovered the unforeseen consequences of wearing a mask in the age of COVID-19. I was out picking up some stuff, Buckner said in an interview with the News Gazette. It was normal. He was dressed in casual clothes, wearing a hooded sweatshirt, sweatpants, and gym shoes. He was also following Governor J.B. Pritzker's recent order by wearing a mask. Everything was fine until I left the store, Buckner said. A uniformed officer approached me and made some weird small talk about the items in my cart. The officer then asked to see Buckner's receipt. My receipt wasn't readily available, Buckner said. I'm messy. I crinkled it up and threw it in my pocket. I had to find it. The officer waited for Buckner to locate the receipt. I gave it to him. He glanced at it briefly and then asked for my ID, Buckner said. Buckner presented his driver's license. I thought that also was weird, but I figured I should just comply and go from there, Buckner said. The officer went to his nearby squad car. I'm assuming he ran my name for any kind of warrants, Buckner said. After 2 to 3 minutes, the officer returned to Buckner, gave his license back, and said thanks. Buckner stopped the officer and asked, Can you explain to me what was the impetus for this stop? Buckner said the officer replied, People are using the COVID virus to do a lot of bad things and get away with it. Buckner continued to describe the encounter. He said it in kind of a matter-of-fact way. I can't see your face, man, and you look by, you might be like you might be up to something. Buckner's original plan was to let the incident go. I went home, and oddly enough, I didn't think about it twice that day, he said. I went along my normal Sunday process, made dinner, and talked to a couple of my old teammates from the U of I. On Monday, Buckner said he was upset with himself for being so comfortable with it. I was uncomfortable that I was so comfortable. So Buckner started a long stream on Twitter to explain what happened. A heightened situation. In one post, he wrote, I can't help but think about whether or not my friends of different races ever got the prospect not to suspect talk. How many of them needed it for their survival? I think I know the answer. I've struggled with whether or not to say something about this publicly. The masks, Buckner said, will be required moving forward, which adds to the significance of the encounter. The officer never raised his voice or cursed at him, Buckner said. I didn't feel physically threatened, Buckner said. Had he approached different, or I had approached different, at any point throughout that and we escalated, it could have turned into a situation that would have been much worse than this. Since going public with this story, Buckner has heard from others who face similar issues. I understand that we are all in a heightened situation now. Everybody's stressed. Everybody's trying to figure out how to operate in this environment, Buckner said. I also understand it's got to be a very rough time to be a first responder, a law enforcement person, just like it is to be a healthcare person. There's a lot going on. What I'm not that interested in doing is casting aspersions or oversimplifying it by calling names or saying things like racial profiling or racist or white privilege. There's enough of that that goes on. From where I stand at this vantage point, I want to have a more thorough, more lasting conversation about how we make sure we are operating in a more intentional fashion. Things could get scary very quickly. Buckner got the name and badge number of the officer who stopped him. He wrote it all down as soon as he returned to his car. I did not identify myself as an attorney or as an elected official during the process, Buckner said. I have spoken to the city, both the mayor's office and CPD, Chicago Police Department, about it, but I have not formally filed a complaint. Being responsible. To Buckner, the most important point is to have the conversation. It could happen in Champaign, it could happen in Urbana, it could happen in Alton if we don't talk about it, Buckner said. We've all been trained to operate certain ways. None of us have this experience that we're having now. The reaction on social media to Buckner's story has been mostly positive. I've gotten a lot of support from folks, Buckner said. I'm happy that people are wanting to talk about it. The one thing I don't like about it is I read some of the back and forth on social media. A lot of people are divided on this. It's forcing folks to run to their corner. You've got either your pro-cop or anti-cop. Either you're this or you're that, which is not the case. Most of life is somewhere in the gray area. It's complex, and it needs context. Those conversations that are polar bother me. Buckner is a proponent of the stay-at-home directive and the mask order. Those are the right things, and the responsible things to do for the state, he said. Buckner's father, Raymond, is in his mid-70s and a two-time cancer survivor. Raymond Buckner is in the high-risk group endangered by COVID-19. I look at wearing that mask as being responsible when it comes to my family, Buckner said. Despite the recent incident, Buckner continues to wear his mask in public. His mother, Yvonne, makes them. Never an issue in CU. Buckner, a standout at Chicago Morgan Park, checked in at 6'2", 265 during his Illinois playing days. Signed by Ron Turner in 2003, he redshirted that season. Turner was fired after 04 and replaced by Ron Zook. Buckner stayed with the team after the coaching change. Did he have any experiences similar to the one two Sundays ago? My 4 years in Champaign-Urbana? Never, Buckner said. Buckner grew up on Chicago's South Side. His father was a longtime member of the Cook County Sheriff's Office. Buckner's uncle, Robert, worked for the Chicago Police Department. Buckner took advice on dealing with law enforcement from them, and he listened to his coach at Morgan Park, Lexi Spurlock. Since the coronavirus pandemic, he has talked to Turner and Zook and a bunch of old teammates. That is one good thing that came out of COVID, to connect with people I haven't talked to in a decade, he said. What is Buckner's message after his recent experience? These are unprecedented times. We're all on high alert, but we can't let that stress get the best of us and allow us to make decisions that are detrimental to us or other people, he said. We are all in this together. We've got to figure out how to address some of the demons of the past, but also not to let social distancing increase social ills. The next headline reads, Douglas County, Main Street Blues. We can't survive down here, Arcola mayor says. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Tuscola. The candies behind the counter are still being sold, the ice cream is still being scooped at the soda fountain, and meals are still being sold for carryout. But under the governor's stay-home order, business at Flessor's Candy Kitchen, that's Flessor's, F-L-E-S-O-R, apostrophe S, at Flessor's Candy Kitchen in Tuscola, has dwindled to 25% of what it was before, said co-owner Devin Flesser Story. She's ready for a plan that would allow the restaurant to fully operate again, she said, and whatever the health department says they would have to do, that is what we would do. The county health department and local officials have been meeting to discuss a safe reopening plan that fits Douglas County, but for now they're urging everyone to continue complying with the governor's order. Please recognize that a continuation of these efforts will greatly diminish the power of this virus, yet it can put hardship on our community residents and local businesses, the Douglas County COVID-19 Task Force said in a May 9th statement to county residents and businesses. We have heard your concerns with the continuation of the stay-at-home orders. County officials, city officials, and some local businesses have been working behind the scenes with other counties and regions to explore alternate options to reopen our county in a safe and consistent manner. Tuscola City Administrator Drew Howell, H-O-E-L, said he interrupted the statement as, or interpreted, excuse me, said he interpreted the statement as encouraging people to be patient and comply with the governor's order. Tuscola is part of the task force discussions. he said, but isn't at a point at which it's ready to take action or issue any guidelines for reopening. County Health Department Administrator Amanda Miner said it's been difficult trying to please everyone on both sides of the stay-home order. Our main concern is protecting the public, protecting the most vulnerable, she said. However, it does appear that some of our most vulnerable have become these businesses and other organizations that are being hurt by this. One concern that has to be weighed is the potential for communities and businesses that don't remain in strict compliance with the governor's order to lose their liability coverage if something goes wrong, Miner said. I don't want to put our community or businesses in jeopardy, she said. She and others on the task force want the community to know they're listening to concerns, Miner said. And they still want to work with the governor as they look at what fits the needs of Douglas County, she said. It is with a pleading heart that we ask the businesses and residents to trust in the process and continue to comply with the governor's order, with the understanding that we are working on a plan for our county and our region, the task force statement urged. Arcola Mayor Larry Ferguson said Monday that Douglas County's number of COVID-19 cases has held at 20 for a full week, and the county hasn't had any COVID-19 deaths. Our businesses are struggling. Our towns are struggling. I'm not sure our governor really understands downstate, he said. County State's attorney, Kate Watson, said court proceedings have resumed in Douglas County in ways that are socially responsible, and she urged everyone to work together on a safe reopening for the community. Chicago is a different community than Atwood or Arcola or Newman, she said. The challenges that might persist in opening something on Lakeshore Drive in Chicago, Illinois, would be very different from opening on Main Street in Tuscola. Story said Flessers has three buildings and plenty of space, so it would be easy to seat customers 6 feet apart. If the county board would come up with a reopening strategy, we would be thrilled, she said. Ferguson said reopening the community would come with some guidance, but he also believes business and restaurant owners have been responsible. He contended Douglas County is ready to reopen once local officials are all on board with a plan. We can't survive down here, Ferguson said. I know people up north are hurting too, but we have to take care of our own down here. And in the on the front page, in the very middle of the front page, there's a large picture, and the caption under the picture reads, Flesser's Candy Store co-owners Ann Beck left and Devin Flesser Story at the business in Tuscola on Monday. So it's two women sitting on these little bar stools, but it's for a candy store. They have white aprons on and they're sitting and it's empty. And that picture was provided by Robin Schultz of the News Gazette. The next headline reads, Coronavirus Pandemic, Day 53 of State Shutdown. Illinois Champaign County by the numbers. 79,007 cases, 3,459 deaths, and that's the total kind of numbers for right now. The next headline reads, Top of the Morning, Something to Get You Going Today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. The centerfold of the 1985-86 Chicago Bulls calendar features Michael Jordan dunking on Washington's Dan Roundfield, with a young Ed Bond cheering him on from press row. Bond, the longtime WDWS radio engineer who makes our coverage of Illini Athletics tick, was with WMAQ at the time, working alongside Jim Durham and Red Kerr. The attention given The Last Dance prompted Bond to dust off the calendar, which was tucked away at his Urbana residence. Now I think I'll get it framed, he said. So The Last Dance was the recently aired documentary on Michael Jordan. Bond had limited interaction with Jordan, leaving the Bulls coverage team before the team started rattling off NBA championships. Among the most memorable games Bond helped produce was Jordan's 63-point effort in a playoff loss at Boston Garden. The next headline reads, History. Area History. In 1920, only one bid was presented for the construction of a concrete pavement on West Daniel Street through the Champaign Chamber of Commerce addition, and the City Council today rejected the bid. It instructed the city clerk to advertise for a second time. The pavement is to extend from Pine Street one block east to Prospect Avenue. In 1970, professors at the University of Illinois were urged by the U of I Faculty Senate to minimize the educational disadvantages to students who miss class during the ongoing student strike. In 2005, Governor Rod Blagojevich on Wednesday proposed a dramatic reform of the state's campaign finance laws, including a ban on corporate and union campaign contributions and a limit on contributions from individuals, political action committees, and state parties. Illinois is one of only five states in the nation with no limits on how much individuals or groups can give to candidates for state office. Two likely candidates for governor, State Senator Bill Brady, a Republican from Bloomington, and State Senator Steve Rauschenberger, a Republican from Elgin, said it would be unfair to change the campaign fundraising rules before the election, particularly since the governor has been able to grow a massive war chest under the existing rules. People say he's got $10 million to $20 million in the bank, Brady said. Now, I'm all for reform, but it's got to be done fairly. You can't turn around and say, I've got $20 million and the rest of you can't raise money. Now come at me. International history, today's highlight. On May 12, 2002, Jimmy Carter arrived in Cuba, becoming the first U.S. president, in or out of office, to visit since the 1959 revolution that put Fidel Castro in power. The next headline reads, Coronavirus Pandemic, Capital News, Illinois. Senior aide to governor tests positive. Pritzker, state still not ready to lift restrictions. This article is written by Peter Hancock and is based out of Springfield. All senior staff in Governor J.B. Pritzker's office are working from home after a senior staff member tested positive for COVID-19, the governor's office announced Monday. The unidentified staffer tested positive last week and has so far not shown any symptoms of the disease, but the person is reported to have been in close contact with the governor and other staff members. Pritzker said during his daily COVID-19 briefing Monday in Chicago that he did not have direct contact with the individual, but that the person had taken part in large meetings with him and other staff. Pritzker also said that he has tested negative for the disease and was last tested Sunday morning. Most of the estimated 125 employees in the governor's office have been working from home for weeks, but about 20 staff members have been reporting to work in person at the James R. Thompson Center in Chicago, where Pritzker had been holding daily media briefings about the crisis. The governor halted weekend briefings Saturday, and Monday's event was held via video conference. Pritzker plans to continue his daily briefings, which are streamed live on Facebook, Twitter, and other platforms. The governor's office said staff members have followed safety protocols from the Illinois Department of Public Health, including daily temperature checks, wearing face coverings, and practicing social distancing and strict hygiene procedures. The news of an infection within the governor's office came just days after reports that two people in the White House, a spokeswoman for Vice President Mike Pence and a valet for President Donald Trump, had also tested positive. Those developments have prompted questions about how any workplace can be made safe in the current environment, even as some businesses, churches, and legislative Republicans have been pushing Pritzker to reopen the state sooner. Last week, Pritzker outlined a five-phase plan for gradually reopening the state on a region-by-region basis, only if they meet certain benchmarks for infection rates and hospitalization usage over a 28-day period. He said Monday that he is not yet ready to relax those standards. People who open their businesses at this time, knowing that mitigations are just now beginning to help us bend the curve down. We flattened it, but the goal here is to bend the curve down ultimately. That by opening early, they're putting people at risk, he said. And there's a picture of Governor Pritzker with an American flag behind him. He's at a podium talking, I believe, at one of his daily briefings. Under the caption, it reads, Governor J.B. Pritzker speaks during the daily press briefing regarding the coronavirus pandemic earlier this month in Chicago. Pritzker's office announced Monday that a senior staffer had tested positive for COVID-19 last week. That picture is provided by Aaron Hooley of the Chicago Tribune. The next headline reads, Ask the Admin, a daily question for Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pryde. That's Julie Pryde, P-R-Y-D-E. Question, Clark Lindsay discovered that a resident tested positive for COVID-19. They tested all employees and residents and reported that all were negative. Is there any theory of how the first resident became infected? Answer, the case investigation was not able to determine a specific epidemiologic link. The individual could have been infected by a trip outside of the facility for medical treatment or within the facility. What we do know, however, is that Clark Lindsay employees' adherence to strict infection control protocol prevented spread within the facility. Have a question for Julie Pryde? Email news@newsgazette.com. The next headline reads, Following the Leader, and there's a large picture on the front page of the B section of the News Gazette. It's a big picture of one goose followed by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 9 goslings and another goose not far behind. The caption reads, A family of geese walks across an access road near Steak and Shake on North Prospect in Champaign on Monday. Tonight, the Urbana Park District Board could vote on a charity harvest for geese numbers that have gotten out of control. And we'll have more on that story soon. The next headline reads, Area Fairs, still up in the air. Fisher, Champaign County, hope events will go on. Ford County cancels. This article is written by Bob Asmussen. Right now, 2 months before it is scheduled to start, the Fisher Fair is a go. In the time of the COVID-19 pandemic, Jill Hardesty hopes it stays that way. Still on course? Yes, Fisher Fair Secretary Hardesty said Monday, but we'll probably decide something around June 1st. The fair is set for July 7th through 11th, a month after the Piatt County Fair, canceled last week, and Ford County Fair, postponed Monday, were to be held. The issue right now is timing for our vendors, Hardesty said. They're all scheduled to come to our fair, but will they come? We don't know. Cleanliness will be one key, Hardesty said, making sure tables and chairs are properly sanitized. If the annual event is held, Hardesty is unsure about the size of the crowds. Will the customers come out to the fair? Hardesty said. They have to take responsibility for themselves also, so if somebody's compromised, they would probably not want to come. Right now, those are our issues. Fisher Fair officials have to decide if they want to spend money for an event that might not draw well, or is called off to get later. Do we cut the losses now, she said. We're just going with what we can, and if we can't go, we can't go. Hardesty said Fisher Fair officials haven't discussed the idea of moving it back to later in the summer or early in the fall. This year's Fisher's Fair, if it happens, will be the 79th and feature performance from country singer Jimmy Allen. The fair board will ultimately make the decision with the guidance of local health officials. Hardesty has been in regular contact with other fairs in the state. Another conference call was scheduled for Monday night. Champaign County Fair Board Administrative Assistant Lacey Teare, T-E-A-R-E, confirmed the July 23rd, August 1st event, which has the Beach Boys booked for a concert on opening day, remains on schedule with no modifications at this time. A notice on the homepage of the fair's website says, The fair board and staff are currently working to put on the Champaign County Fair as scheduled. The health and safety of fairgoers is our top priority, and we will continue to work closely with the CU Department of Public Health and the National CDC. On Monday, the Ford County Fair, originally set for mid-June in Melvin, was postponed. After weeks of monitoring and many discussions between our board members and local health officials, we are heartbroken to announce that the 2020 Ford County Fair will be postponed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Fair Board President Kirk Miller wrote to vendors, exhibitors, and supporters. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, May 12, 2020. I'll resume shortly with a reading of part two of the News Gazette, so please stay with me. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.